With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. This is the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hey, good to have your company. I think what we might do is have a regular segment where we watch inflation, because so often inflation seems to dictate how people are getting on, how their interest rates are impacting their mortgages, etc. So maybe we should run the music now. Inflation watch now. Inflation has held at 3.4% in the year to February in Australia. In more good news for mortgage holders and the Reserve Bank as it battles to bring consumer price growth back under control, analysts had expected inflation would drift higher in that second month, and KPMG chief economist Brendan Rinn said the third steady month reaffirmed his view that the inflation surge is now over. If only Brendan was the chief of the Reserve Bank of Australia. Let's just hope the Reserve Bank of Australia governor has the same kind of view, that the inflation surge is now over. It is good news for those who are waiting for some relief, especially in terms of mortgage rates. Let's go to our talkback lines. By the way, you can be part of the conversation. Just because I have the likes of John Shipton on the program or Prue McSween or whoever doesn't mean that you cannot join that same conversation. So if you want to dial in from the United States or Canada, do so on 1-888-201-6425. From the UK, 033-0024-1026, or from Australia and New Zealand, 1-800-670-310. We'll be getting to New Zealand in just a short moment. But first, let's go to the talkback lines. Siv, thank you for calling.
No worries, Chris. Yes, well, my theme of today's call is pretty much similar to yesterday's. It's about numbers, and it relates to something that Prue McSween was saying. Well, if it is that there are lots of people who distrust politicians and all the rest of it, and I don't doubt that for a second, then I think we've got to use that to our advantage now. We've got to really use that to our advantage and vote for those small parties. Now, you've got to look carefully. I'd urge people to do that, because you've got parties like the Greens at the moment, and we know that they're a bunch of absolutists, and without, you know, being too lecherous, I don't think that we should be voting for absolutists. That's not going to be good for the country, because you know what absolutists will do? They'll send us back into the bloody caves. Said that if you
exactly what the Greens do time and time again on every single policy they look over.
That's right. Yes. So I would give them a miss, but there are other good parties that you can get behind. There are options for you if you want to. But the point is that if you sit there continually saying, oh, yes, I don't trust them, I don't like them, but you vote for the majors, and that's not going to do anybody any good. And I go back to what I was saying before. There's more of us than there is of them. And we've got to vote that way. We've got to think that way. We've got to start standing up for ourselves, because time and time again, politicians, bureaucrats and all the rest of it do these things because they think the citizenry are not going to stand up. They're not going to protest.
See.
We are not given to protest in Australia like they are in France. We only did it once, in a huge way in, I think, 2011. I think we probably may have done it even before that, but we're not given to big protests here.
No, unless, of course, you're 20 or 21 years of age, you're at university, you've got some free time, and you're pretty big on social justice, and out you go into the streets. But
sorry,
it doesn't work when you're an older person and you care even more about what's going on in your country, sadly.
That's right. Yeah, sorry, I forgot about Extinction Rebellion. Yeah, people like to glue themselves to roads. But see, we don't have to glue ourselves to roads. There's more of us than there is of them, and we could use the political pull that we have, but we just got to use it. And I feel that, you know, sometimes we don't do that.
No.
We don't do that. We must do it. And I said the same thing about rebelling against the UN yesterday, and I'm going to say the same thing about minor parties today. Use your numbers, people. Good to talk to you, Chris.
Good on you, Siv. Thank you very much. Fantastic to have your company. This is Chris Smith on TNT.
There's a lot going on, so it's important to stay informed and up to date.
Get ready, because here we go.
At the top, 30 minutes past and when it breaks.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, New Zealand's response to COVID-19 was one of the most draconian and cruel in the world. A lot of people talk about Victoria as the worst. Well, sorry, New Zealand comes awfully close, if not eclipses Victoria. But if you think that was bad, There's a case right now you're about to hear, which is the most draconian, ridiculous, and stupid rule that you have ever heard related to a patient who wants a heart transplant. Of course, when you don't have a jab, the virus gets precedent over your ticker. Work that out, because I can't. Kirsten Murfitt is a New Zealand lawyer, writer, advocate for justice, and principal of KM Law. After graduating from University of Auckland in 1999, Kirsten gained her formative experience as a barrister and solicitor at two top-tier law firms in Auckland. Recently, she's had publicly raised her concerns that proposed amendments to the International Health Regulations of 2005 and the WHO Pandemic Treaty will transfer powers over health policy to an unelected and unaccountable body in Geneva. You've heard me speak about this and how much I am also against it. Let's join Kirsten, who's in the beautiful Bay of Plenty in New Zealand. Kirsten Murfitt, welcome to TNT.
Hi, Chris. How are you? Thank you so much for having me.
I'm very well.
On.
I'm very jealous that you live in the Bay of Plenty and we don't.
Have you been to the Bay of Plenty?
Yeah, and I've been to the Bay of Islands, and I've been to a few places in New Zealand. It's the most picturesque country in the entire world, isn't it?
It is beautiful, but I'm half Australian, lived there a couple of times in my life, and I love Australia as well.
Okay, you've said the right thing. Thank you very much. All right. Last week, you posted on X concern about a case regarding a New Zealand woman by the name of Irene being refused a life-saving heart transplant due to declining one vaccine in 2024. This is more shocking than what New Zealand did during the pandemic.
It's absolutely ludicrous, isn't it? And that's why I have stepped up and helping out. So she approached New Zealand Doctors Speaking Out in Science, which we call for short NZDSOS. Yep. And they put me in touch with her because we wanted to get an affidavit. So if the unfortunate was to happen, and we really hope that it doesn't, we actually have an affidavit to testify to what's happened to her. Because she isn't, I mean, you're pretty serious health if you actually need a heart transplant. She's had other procedures which haven't helped her health. So,
like at the end of the day, who gives a stuff about that virus? Who gives a stuff about COVID when you need a new
heart? She's had COVID. The funniest thing is she's had COVID. So she survived. She's absolutely fine. And they've still got this ridiculous view. So early March, she received a letter from the Auckland District Health Board because the cardiology team had actually approached them to say, well, what is the rules now? It's 2024. And I was shocked when I read it. So I'll just read you the exact paragraph so I don't get it wrong. So they say that the COVID-19 vaccine is required because it's not only protective for the patient and the donor organ, but also for the immune-compromised transplant patients with whom the patient will be in close contact during their course of the transplant journey. So they need to spend 3 months in Hearty Towers. And I can't believe they're still saying that she's more of a risk of transmitting the virus than anyone else in there.
Well,
we know that's not
true. I remember some of the immunologists telling us during the pandemic, and they got a lot wrong, by the way, but a lot of the immunologists saying, oh, look, listen, if you get the COVID virus, you're probably just as full of immunity than what you would be if you had a vaccine.
Exactly. So natural immunity. So we're looking at getting some antibody tests so we can take that back to the DHB. She's allowed.
How ridiculous that you'd have to do that.
It's beyond ridiculous. So I'm doing an Official Information Act request, and one of my questions is, okay, well, will you accept an unvaccinated organ? I mean, I'm a donor on my driver's license. Are they not going to take my organs now?
Yes, that's very good.
I can't wait to see the response to that question.
You will have them tied up in knots.
Yes, we will. But don't give my game plan away.
Yeah, no, it's just between you and I. We'll forget about the people who are listening
and all the
watching.
People listening.
How can the law in New Zealand allow this denial of care? Surely you've got to balance your rules. You've got to look at regulations and say, what regulation is more of a priority, is more important than the other regulation, don't you?
Absolutely. And we've got a code here, the Health and Disability Code. So within the OIA letter that I'm doing, I'm actually referring to the applicable principles and asking them to reflect on those principles before they answer my questions. So just a gentle little nudge and a reminder, because what they're saying is, oh, it's the transplant board and it's another board. Well, why do they get to decide who lives and dies because of a vaccine that doesn't work and doesn't stop transmission?
Yeah. Yeah. Good rhetoric question.
Yeah.
Now, Irene is not alone in being denied healthcare over her vaccination status, obviously, right?
Unfortunately, that's correct. I've had another family reach out to me. They want to remain confidential. So does Irene, but she's allowed me to use her first name from the letter. Because they're really scared that if they speak up, they might be cut off and actually miss out and be taken off the transplant list, which is, when you're dealing with someone's life and someone that you love, I mean, I can't imagine. And then we've had another case, which is a different organ, but the same story. So that was, I mean, I posted last week, that's three cases that have had the courage to come forward.
And some stupid law or mandate that shouldn't even be in place in the last 18 months.
It's not even a law. It's the bureaucrats.
Yeah.
As I call them, bureaurats. And they have the problem, I think, both in Australia and New Zealand and other Commonwealth countries, is they rule the roost.
Yeah.
And as politicians actually rely on them.
As we saw during the pandemic, yeah. Kirsten.
Exactly.
You know, we had politicians who took what they were being told by health bureaucrats as gospel and acting accordingly, instead of doing what politicians should do and take the advice and then make a judgment based on counter advice or a conglomeration of advice. They didn't do that.
No, and there's so many vested interests as well. Like when you look at it, and then there's paid research papers, like where they get the funding from. And I was absolutely blind to all this before 2020. If I saw a paired research piece of paper, then that was the gold standard. And I imagine a lot of politicians felt the same. But there came a point in time, I think everyone has questioned how far they've gone along questioning. It's a different story. But I think everyone has questioned something within the COVID response. So why haven't these bloody politicians?
Yeah.
So I get quite heated about this because it's 2024. A lady's life is on the line.
Yeah. It's so true. Yeah. I like a lawyer who uses the word bloody. You've just passed a major test. Thank you very much. I just need to take a quick break. I want to talk about the wider problems we face now with the WHO thinking that they're overly entitled. We'll talk about that and more right after a quick break. We'll come back with Kirsten Murford on TNT.
TNT's Jason Allborn.
What that sneaky World Health Organization, that private organization linked to the United Nations, is planning to do to take away yours and my medical sovereignty. Or pretending that they're not going to, of course, because it just so happens that they have got the ability to look into a crystal ball, see around corners, and tell us that there is yet another virus or disease or sickness coming for us, and the only way that we survive it is to do exactly what Tedros tells us to do, even though the man's not even a doctor. Can't even tell his own Ethiopian country on three separate occasions, goodness me, that they have had a cholera outbreak. Cholera characterized by acute watery diarrhea that, if not diagnosed correctly, can result in death. Well, on three occasions, Tedros's answer was, we didn't have good enough testing or testing available, so we didn't really know that it was cholera. That's the guy who's leading the world.
Weekends with Jason Allborn on today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
It sounds pretty good.
It sounds real, dude.
It's not bad, huh?
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Here we are talking to Kirsten Murford, lawyer in New Zealand, about this horrible case involving Irene, where she wants to have a heart transplant, needs to have a heart transplant, and because of her vaccination status and she didn't take a jab in 2024, she's being refused under, you know, the same circumstances as the next transplant patient. It is outrageous, it is ridiculous, it is stupid, and it is deadly. Now, I want to go to the chat box on tntradio.live. The chat box says from Julianne, please, Chris, explore the case of young Dazelle Peters. She is an Australian teenager who has also been refused to go on the transplant list due to vaccination status. She is in a very dangerous state. It is criminal. There's a classic case. Lou has said the same thing. Make sure you look at the cases that are happening right here in Sydney. So that's interesting. Meanwhile, I've got Barbara on our talkback lines who wants to tell me exactly the same thing. Go ahead, Barbara. Shirley, is it? Shirley, go right ahead.
Yeah, I was going to mention Dazelle. There's also a lady named Fiona who is not allowed to have a heart transplant because she wouldn't take the vaccination. She's been on Cafe Locked Out and Club Grubbery, you know, with Hoodie and John.
Yep.
And Siv was saying regarding the demonstrations, they tried it in Melbourne and were hit with rubber bullets. You know, over 100,000 or 200,000 people went to Canberra, and most of them got burnt with what they think is LRAD, their lips inside their clothes. They had black lips and black skin for weeks. So people did hear, not in 2011, but I think 2021 or 22, we did try to demonstrate, but the government is against us. That's all I want to say.
No, you've said it perfectly, Shirley. And in terms of those two cases, I know Fiona's case. I haven't caught up with Giselle's case, but I will when I get off, and we'll do some more work on this. Thank you very much for calling in.
Thank you. Great show, Chris. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Kirsten Murfitt, does that surprise you? Probably not.
Unfortunately, it doesn't. Nothing surprises me these days. The cruelty is just beyond what I can comprehend people can do to another human being.
It's just dumb red tape. There should be a sense of discretion and a sense of humanity about how these regulations are dealt with. All right, you've spent expensive time on New Zealand's public consultation process for the proposed World Health Organization amendments. Where are we up to with this? And are countries around the world falling into line and getting duped?
We don't know, because a lot of it's done behind closed doors, and that's the first red flag for me.
Yeah.
So last year I ran a petition, and got 26,000 signatures in 2 weeks. So New Zealand was one of the only countries in the world to reject the 1st December amendment. So that just means that we've got longer time to consider if these IHRs come into play. They're voting on the 27th to the 31st of May this year in Geneva. Mm-hmm. They've got another meeting coming up. I think it's the 8th of April. And I'm hoping that signals that meeting wasn't planned, that maybe there's a lot of debate going on. I know a lot of the African and poorer countries don't want this because it's going to cost them a lot in infrastructure. And usually a pandemic is a 1 in 100 year event.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it doesn't make sense to a lot of people. Why do we have to have all this infrastructure and spend all this money now when we're just coming out of COVID? And if Australia is in any shape like New Zealand, I mean, we spent something like $7 billion. And that's just the economic cost. That doesn't also include the social cost.
Yeah, yeah. See, the whole thing is, if the origins of COVID-19 were focused on the natural release of viruses from nature, you'd probably think that it's no longer a once in a 100-year likelihood.
No, you wouldn't. And we knew this very early on about the relative and absolute risk, which was completely and utterly ignored.
But given what we know about the lab in Wuhan, you've got to suggest that hopefully this has been scared those labs enough to get their act together and to prevent this happening again. And so therefore we get back to 1 in 100. We don't need to give the WHO any further powers, do we?
No. And what I've been telling people, under the current regulation, Article 18, that's where all the pandemic response rolled out from. So if you didn't like that response, then you're not going to like the new strengthened amendments, which are going to be like the COVID response on steroids.
Last week, the WHO launched a new toolkit for health professionals to tackle climate change.
I know.
Like, get your noses out of these things. What's climate change got to do with the World Health Organization?
Oh, you've got a guy running it that's not even a doctor.
Correct.
And the first person to actually run it back in the 40s was a psychiatrist, which I find very interesting.
Yes. Yeah. Well, at least they were able to teach the staff how to fool the public, which, of course, they did during the pandemic. But do you see any parallels between, you know, COVID alarmism and climate alarmism? That's a rhetoric question, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm on the same page as you. But what I'm very concerned about is so many people in New Zealand, I think it was 1 million downloads of the vaccine passport. So people actually bought into it and thought they had to show their papers to go into a store, go to a funeral, etc. And now they're starting to talk about these carbon passports.
Oh.
Which.
Carbon yes. passports.
Yes. And the scariest thing is I think New Zealand is a bit of a test centre for various policies from overseas influences. And the Bay of Plenty Council, which is my council, has actually launched the Future Fit so we can track our carbon footprint.
How fantastic.
So you know what's going to happen next, don't you?
Yeah. That's exactly right. You know, I had a politician talk to me on air yesterday about the fact that in an area where he was raised, in Liverpool, in Sydney's western suburbs, the local council there is under enormous pressure from the local Greenies because they dared to approve an entire football field with AstroTurf and not natural grass. This is so they don't have all of these abandonments of kids' sport, so the kids can keep playing sport.
Yeah.
And that's apparently horrible because you could just imagine what that one football field in Western Sydney would be doing to the warming of the planet, Kirsten. Hey? That's their argument.
The thing is, climate change has been around for donkey's years. I mean, when the dinosaurs were around, it was like on an average of 13 degrees hotter.
Yeah.
And they've also proved a lot of the United Nations forecasting, they actually got it wrong.
Yeah. I want to talk about one other problem that seems to be a thorn in our sides and we need to keep protesting about it. The Digital Identity Services Trust Framework Act in New Zealand was given royal assent in April of 2023 and comes into effect in July this year. Good luck to you guys. It establishes a regulatory framework that sets out rules for the delivery of accredited digital identity services. Will we be tracked and digitally monitored everywhere, not just in New Zealand, do you think?
If they win, we're fighting. Obviously, you guys are fighting really hard as well. So over my dead body.
Yeah.
But what I am really concerned about, there was an article in the mainstream paper last week that the New Zealand Transport Agency is put a camera up north and they want 800 of these cameras around New Zealand that can actually scan your body temperature.
Oh, stop.
Why does a New Zealand Transport Authority need to know my body temperature?
Someone has too much
time on
their
hands.
So
you sort of take
hands.
All these pieces of information and weave them together and it's looking very Orwellian.
Oh, it's Orwellian, all right. George knew something. He had a flash towards 2024, but this is the sort of stuff that we're getting left, right, and centre. So do you think you're any chance of reversing this act?
We've got a new government, so hopefully, but there's obviously quite a few things they're trying to reverse at the moment. So we had the Therapeutic Products Act come in, so that's now being reversed. We had Three Waters, which basically gave a whole lot of rights to the indigenous people, being the Maori, that actually came from Hawaii. So they're not actually indigenous as such. And there is a whole lot of debate in New Zealand about who were the first people here anyway in terms of the Celtics and more evidence coming out, but that was once again being suppressed.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm seeking the truth. I don't know what the truth is for a lot of things, but I know if there's a narrative and the mainstream media only allows one narrative to go forward, and anyone that stands up like me, I just get bashed around. I'm called a cooker, you name it. I've been called it, but I don't really care.
Yeah.
Sort of a badge of honor for me.
Yeah.
There's something very wrong.
Yeah.
We're meant to be a democracy.
Yeah, and the mainstream media are enabling this by choosing their own narratives. You know, somewhere, and I've seen it where news directors and news producers say, this is where we're going on this subject. Don't deviate from that subject. And then all of these hosts get on their respective programs and say, I've never been told what to say or do. Come on. Yeah. And I can tell you, I can tell you individuals who've told that lie on air over and over again.
Well, it gets even better in New Zealand. We had a $50 million bailout fund, which went to the mainstream media, and they had to sign terms and conditions about what they could say and couldn't say.
Right.
So they were pushing the Labour government's narrative, and we know Jacinda Ardern's tied to the World Economic Forum, the young global leaders, etc.
Yep.
And also she was the president of the International Socialist Youth Group.
Yeah.
Up to the point she became Prime Minister.
Yeah, I could speak to you forever here about, you know, the last three things you've just said. There are plenty of, there's plenty of discussion to be had there.
There's never a dull day.
No, but it's outstanding that New Zealand has someone of your intelligence and courage to get stuck into these issues and bite
them. Oh,
there's
some really good people over here. I mean, we're a nation that gets stuck in a bit like Australians.
Yeah, good on you. Yeah. Fantastic to have you on air, by the way.
Lovely,
and we'll
thank
catch
you.
Up again. Thank you, Kirsten.
Okay, great. Thank you, Chris.
Good on
okay,
you.
Bye.
Kirsten Murfitt is her name, as I said, New Zealand lawyer, writer, advocate for justice, and then some, and principal at KM Law. Good to have her on the program. I've bounced right into the news break, and we'll come back after the news with our Wednesday cyber and tech segment with Alex Zaharoff-Royt, who is somewhere in Thailand. Let's see if we can join him right after this on TNT.
Question.
What are you guys doing today?
The news.
TNT Radio News.
Sounds good.
Matt Boylant here with a look at your TNT headlines. Six people are presumed dead following the bridge collapse in Baltimore, with authorities confirming they will start searching for their bodies on Wednesday morning. The US has 3 weeks to prove to London's High Court that Julian Assange will be spared the death penalty and will be protected by the First Amendment if he is extradited on espionage charges. And Australia looks set to become the first country in the world to launch a formal investigation into the alarming rise in excess deaths.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Yeah, Kirsten Murfitt fighting the good fight in New Zealand, which is really good to see. All right, we go from the Bay of Plenty to Bangkok in Thailand, where Alex Zaharoff-Royt is positioning himself right now. I don't know what time of the day or night it is, but let's find out. Alex, are you with us?
I certainly am, Chris. Great to be with you. It's 1:30 p.m. in Bangkok, so 4 hours behind Sydney time, and it's about 30-plus degrees, very humid, but we're lucky it's not summer.
Yes, I've been to Bangkok many times covering stories as a reporter, and you just melt over there. You come back and you've lost 2 stone.
Yes, although I'm in a very air-conditioned room at the moment. Thank goodness for the Zoom noise cancellation, otherwise you'd hear this hum of the air conditioning. So it's very cold where I am, but very hot outside, that's for sure.
Okay, now Alex's website is techadvice.life, and so anything you hear over the next 20 minutes, you will be able to pick up in full, as a matter of fact, expanded on that website. That is techadvice.life. And if you've got a question, by the way, for Alex, even though he's in Bangkok, he can hear you loud and clear and he'll try and answer your questions. If there's some new technology, if there's particular device problem that you're having, it's hard to troubleshoot without the device in his hands, of course, but there are other questions he can answer about things that you are looking at. Maybe some new tech, some new phones, some new televisions that he may be able to fill in the gaps for you on. Give us a call on our talkback line, 888-201-6425. From the United Kingdom, 1026. And from Australia or New Zealand, 1-800-670-310. So you're in Bangkok and you're there for a big event for Lenovo's.
Yeah, Lenovo. It's Lenovo Innovate 24. So this is where they're launching a whole stack of new products. I've got one of them here to show you, actually. But These are using the Intel Core Ultra fourth generation processor that has built-in AI smart. So the age of having AI operate on your device and not just send everything to the cloud is finally here. All of the manufacturers are going to be doing this. They'll want to convince you to buy a new computer. And the age of the AI PC is here. We've spoken about this a number of times in the past. Now, one of the computers I want to show you is this new Lenovo YogaBook 9i. It's 13-inch, and you can see that it's got this beautiful dual-screen display here. And you can turn it into this book configuration. You can close it down. You can open it up this way, and you've got those beautiful dual screens. You can turn it around like this and have one screen on that side, have another screen on this side. It comes with this keyboard that can sit onto the base here, and then you've got what looks like a normal laptop, and you can even see that on the top there it's got customized things that appear on the top. It's got a special stand on the side here. It all comes in with the device. This special stand allows you to have the laptop either in a this configuration, or you can have the two screens like that, and you can have the laptop just in front of the keyboard just in front of you.
So that's amazing.
At the same time, it is extremely cool, and you've got these dual edges. It's nice and smooth. You even have this rotating soundbar, this Bose and Wilkins soundbar that doesn't matter which configuration you have it in, you're getting the Dolby Atmos sound. So they've thought of all these different things. It comes with a stylus in the box. It comes with the mouse as well. So, I mean, it's an ultimate sort of creator's machine if you're a programmer. If you're somebody who's, you know, working on a document on one side, you've got a website or a presentation on the other side. I mean, this is the sort of innovation that we're seeing coming out of the PC world, and these two screens now are quite a standard thing. Most of the laptops obviously only have one screen, but this is a trend we're going to see more and more of. And Lenovo has also been working on all their accessories as well, the little noise-canceling headphones, looking very similar to the AirPods. That's sort of the style. So another gadget they have is this Ultimate Gamers device. And so their gamers laptop, and gaming is such a huge a part of people's lives today. It's got this new cold front hyper system, which is 2 degrees cooler, 2 decibels quieter than last year. And instead of the air coming out of the sides, the air is coming out of the back. And they figured out a way to make the air come out quicker and to be cooler. And look, it's, you know, when you're a gamer, you want to have this extreme performance. All these little tiny changes make a big difference to the amount of frame rates and the performance and your ability to react quickly. So there's plenty more. I've recorded the 45-minute presentation in full. I have yet to upload it, but they go into all the different details. And of course, AI on the processor. There's an AI chip inside, a second AI chip that can fine-tune the system, give you better performance for games. With this particular unit, you're looking at 24.5 hours of battery life on one screen and 15 hours of battery life on the two. So definitely there's going to be lots of temptation to get a new machine in 2024 from a number of vendors. And Lenovo is the world's number one PC vendor, so they'll be pushing hard to tempt the hearts, wallets, and minds of consumers.
Just answer this question for me. Why would Lenovo decide to hold such an incredible launch in Bangkok, of all places?
Because it's the heart of Asia. I mean, you can go to anywhere in Asia, but you know, there's lots of people in Thailand and all the countries around. I mean, it's the Asian century, right? This is the Asian century where Asia has become much more advanced. I mean, when I was here in the past, I can see that so many streets and buildings, everything's been upgraded. So, you know, the people here are living a very Western modern life. In years gone by, you would have come to Asia and seen lots of little tuk-tuks or lots of bikes everywhere. But now you see plenty of EVs. I mean, it's a first world modern nation. And, you know, all the different Asian countries are in close proximity to each other. This is a buzzing part of the world. I mean, we've had millions of conferences in the US or Europe. Asia is where all the growth is happening. I mean, all these technologies are made in China or in different parts of Asia. So this is just Lenovo making sure that, you know, at least some of their activities are happening in this region, which is the growth region for the world.
Yeah, interesting. All right. We know that you're either a hoarder or a chucker, and I'm a chucker, by the way, although I fall into this category as one of the many millions of people who hoard mobile phones.
Yes, look, the Australian Mobile Telecommunications Association has created a program called mobilemuster.com.au. It's in its 25th year was last year. And they're saying that Australians are collectively hoarding a staggering 22 million old phones. Nearly 14 million of those are reported as unusable or not working. They're just sitting in someone's drawer. And part of the reason why is people are a bit concerned that, look, they haven't had a chance to wipe them yet. They might not have the plugs anymore. Might be the old iPhone plug, or the plug might be broken.
Yeah.
And so whilst mobilemaster.com.au does have instructions on how to wipe your Android or your iPhone, they're also saying, look, if you can't get your phone going anymore, we will make sure that your data is wiped before we recycle it. And there's a lot of gold and other precious metals that are in these devices that can be recycled as opposed to ending up in landfill and turn up in new phones. We see so much of that mining, both legally done and also child mining in countries, you know, with cobalt and other things where it's, you know, the kids are sort of mining it illegally. So the more that we can recycle this tech, and don't forget, some of this tech is still refurbishable, really reusable by somebody else. It hasn't reached the end of its lifespan yet. So you can go to mobilemaster.com.au. You can go to any phone store. Most of the shopping supermarkets have a box in there where you can put phones, old modems, you know, batteries. So definitely, you know, get some of those old devices out, especially if they're out of date. Just recycle them and you will be a much better global citizen. Let's put it that way.
And lighter as well. We've got a couple of drawers full of these things. You know, you keep them initially because you think, well, hang on, that new phone mightn't suit me, so I'll keep the old one. But then 3 years goes round and you think to yourself, what am I keeping the old one for? I understand why people do it. All right, tell me about Elon Musk's Neuralink brain-computer interface. You've got an update for us.
Yes. So we did hear earlier this year about how one of the first recipients of this had been able to play chess and move the chess pieces with his mind. Now, I think it's the same fellow. His name is Noland Orba, and he uses a wheelchair because he had a swimming accident, left him paralyzed from his neck down. So he was the guest of honor at the Neuralink company meeting, and you can actually see this meeting online. I don't have all this stuff on my site yet, but later today I'll have it there, including this 52-minute meeting where he comes on stage and he's explaining how he's now able to use the Neuralink chip, you know, the fiber, the piece of special you know, technology has been implanted into his brain to not only control the car from Mario Kart, but actually control it with, you know, great specificity. So he can turn things, he can shoot the different things that you can shoot in that particular game to get other people off the off the racetrack. And he was also able to play the strategy video game Civilization 6. So it's a type of being able to use the force. And look, for people who are quadriplegics, there's really not much left. You know, we haven't figured out how to use nanobots to regrow the spine. So, you know, that may happen one day, and if it does, fantastic. But until then, we need something that you can have in your brain. Hopefully one day it's wireless, but you can have it in your brain in the meantime, and then you can could control an exoskeleton to be able to walk or to cut things or to, you know, have a drink. I mean, restore some of human life back. So these are the first steps, and it's coming a long way so far. The results are fantastic. Another win for Elon Musk.
Yeah, it's amazing technology, just amazing. You know, some things are really incredible, but that's just amazing. All right. When is World Backup Day?
It's on March 31 every year, and this year that's a Sunday. So you can go to worldbackupday.com to get some details, but they're saying that 21% of people have never made a backup. 113 phones are stolen or lost every minute. Let's forget about the ones in drawers. These are the ones people are using. 29% of data loss cases are caused by accident. Now, I think I've mentioned this before, but 3 or 4 years ago, I discovered that apple cider, the alcoholic beverage, is not compatible when it's spilled onto an Apple Mac. Those two apples are not, you know. And luckily I had a backup.
Who would have thought?
Who would have thought? Well, it was very sticky. I managed to open it up and, you know, this all the sugar that's in there. Anyway, it fried my computer and that was the end of that. And I had a backup, though. Thank goodness I plugged in the time machine and had a backup. But 29% of data loss accidents are caused by accident, and 30% of computers are already infected with malware. Now, there's a thing called the 3-2-1 rule. That is where you have three copies of your data stored on two different types of media with one copy kept off-site. Now, some people have extended this to the 4-3-2 rule. Basically, we have so many options of cloud storage. We can have things saved on an SSD. We can buy those very large hard disks of up to 20 terabytes, even from Officeworks or JB or Best Buy. And then you can have your photographs backed up. And you should have multiple backups. If you have all of your backups stored on one of these large hard disks, and then one of the kids or the dog or something happens and that disk crashes to the ground, it could all be gone. So, Vodafone actually shared some tips. Decide what and how much to back up. Choose the most important things like your photographs, or, you know, you can back up your entire phone these days. You can use the cloud for automatic backups for your PC or your phone. Back up regularly, be it daily, monthly, or weekly. But, you know, with Time Machine, it backs up every hour, once per hour, every hour. So you can choose to back up all the time so that if you're working on a document and something happens, you can go straight back to it. It's there. And also back up after big events. One of the examples Vodafone gave was don't risk losing 3 hours worth of videos from the Taylor Swift tour that you were on. Back up immediately. Otherwise, if your phone gets lost or stolen or crushed or broken, those most recent things can be gone. So, you know, definitely don't be somebody who's an expert on backing up after you've lost everything. Don't be the once bitten, twice shy. Be the person that backs up 3 or 4 times to different devices, different mediums, and you'll never be caught unawares.
And on Sunday, March the 31st, put some time aside, even if it's just 1 hour, 1 hour to sit down and work out how you're going to back up, how it works if you haven't done it before, or where that information is and how you access it. It's important. I want to go back to Elon Musk a second. Because let me get to this, because one of our viewers or listeners have said, could you ask him, as in you, Alex, whether you have already been wired up? Would you consider the Neuralink?
Look, the Neuralink is meant for people who have no other choice. There's nothing else they can do. There's no other therapy. I mean, I would certainly consider something like that if it was wireless, if I could just put on like a little patch and it could then augment my brain. I don't particularly want to have brain chips implanted into my brain. Certainly not for the first, 20 generations. I mean, this technology needs to be well proven. And then also, we're worried today that our computers can be turned into zombies by malware. What's to say that if you have some sort of chip, it can't be activated by some dystopian future, communist government that wants to, give us brainwaves to neutralize us or do all those nasty, horrible things we read about in dystopian novels and movies. So, look, any such thing is going to be well down the track, and hopefully by then it'll be wireless. It was wireless for Keanu Reeves in The Matrix Part 2. I would like the same sort of wireless technology to augment my brain.
Yes, I'll wait for the 20th version, and I'll put my hand up at that stage if I'm in that situation. I want to talk about AI, but I've got to take a break. Alex, don't go anywhere. I've got another 10 minutes with you, and we'll do that straight away after a break on TNT.
While serving in Afghanistan, I was hit by sniper fire. The fighting was so intense, the medevac chopper was barely able to land. In the hospital, I was given a 5% chance to live. It's a good thing math wasn't my best subject. Today, I visit classrooms and share my story. I talk to kids about dealing with life's struggles. I tell them, with a little help and a lot of work, that you can overcome any challenge.
DAV helps veterans like Adam get the benefits they've earned. They help more than 1 million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
I know that some struggles are big and some are small, but they're all struggles, and you have to learn to get through them. With support from DAV, more veterans like me can live their best life. And as a new father, I have one more reason to keep on keeping on. My victory is being there for the next generation.
Adam Alexander, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
She was reading at a second grade level in kindergarten.
Pod force swimming before she was 7.
Finally convinced mom to get her ears pierced in the 3rd grade.
Came in 2nd at her 5th grade spelling bee.
Drill team in 7th.
And with one stroke of the keyboard.
One click of the mouse.
It's gone.
It's gone.
It's gone.
Report a cyber tip today.
This is the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
Just before we get back to Alex and talk tech and cyber a little bit further, let's go to London right now where your host after the news, Sonia Poulton, is joining us. Hi, Sonia. How did that farmers' rally go yesterday?
Really well. There was just so much happening in London yesterday, Chris. It was absolutely insane. Of course, we had the handing down of the very bizarre, very twisted Julian Assange judgment as well, which we'll be unpacking on today's show, which even confused WikiLeaks. They originally tweeted that the extradition appeal had been granted and they had to delete it. So if it's even confusing his own publishers, that tells you a little something about that judgment. But yes, the farmers' protest went ahead very well. Of course, absolutely zero mainstream coverage, which we had told you about. So other than on TNT, of course, and we are going to be mainstream in next to no time, frankly.
Yeah, great stuff. All right, we'll be listening, watching all that we can do on TNT in 2024. Thank you very much for your time. All the best.
Thank you. Have a great Wednesday. Take care.
Good on you, Sonia Poulton, who will be joining you after the news. Do not go anywhere. I want to get back to Alex Zaharoff-Royt in Bangkok now. We go from Sydney to London, now to Bangkok. A groundbreaking new AI-powered medical women's health app has been launched today. Explain, this will be interesting. I like this.
Yeah, it's called Charlie Health, Charli. And it's using Australian hybrid technology to do real-world period and reproductive health tracking. And it helps Australians and, frankly, anyone around the world take control of the diagnosis and management of debilitating and highly undiagnosed conditions such as endometriosis, which is where you have the lining of the womb growing in other parts of the body and causing women a great deal of pain. And some of these diagnoses take years to be diagnosed after the onset of the first symptoms. And so this app can really help address this by identifying abnormal patterns, working with Apple Watches and Fitbits and prompting women to discuss this with their doctor. And developed by leading Australian medical and allied health experts, it's a great piece of technology and great to see Endometriosis Australia working with the Charlie Health app using AI technology to help women track, monitor their menstruation, fertility, sexual health, pregnancy, peri and menopause, and identify pain or possible conditions like endometriosis. So definitely one worth women to download.
Yeah, very much so. I think this will go gangbusters. All right. Apple's annual developer conference is on in June, is it?
Yes, it was announced this morning. So fresh news, June the 10th. It'll be June the 11th for us in Australia. It's an in-person event, which, you know, that's sort of been online for a couple of years because of the whole COVID thing. But this is where we will get to see Apple's AI strategy. Now, their invitation didn't mention AI at all, but we know that this is where they're going to be talking about this. Apparently, the news has come out from Bloomberg. Mark Gurman, the big Apple reporter there, that Apple will not have its own generative AI engine, at least not this year. They're going to be working with other Google or Microsoft, which is OpenAI, and in China with Baidu, which is China's version of Google. But they will, you know, show us the latest iOS, iPadOS, macOS, and the other operating systems. They always do that. Show us the cool features that are coming. Give us hints as to what the iPhone 16 and 16 Pro will have. They do want to save that for a September launch. But we will also have lots of developer information on. If you're a developer, you can learn all the latest tricks and tips to take advantage of all of these things. And in fact, one of the things I forgot to mention is that Google is having their big I.O. conference, their version of this big conference in the next couple of weeks too. So we'll have more about that. But everyone's been waiting to see when the Worldwide Developer Conference is on, and it's just been confirmed today, June 10th in the US.
Fantastic. Now, Samsung, if you're one of those Samsung freaks, and I'm a little bit of a biased towards Samsung, always have been. Tell me a little bit about these updates for some of these new phones that will be available shortly.
Sure. Well, as we know, as we've spoken about, Samsung launched the Galaxy S24 earlier this year with a whole raft of AI features, from live translation of phone calls to being able to circle anything on the screen to do a Google search, to being able to live translate text messages or get summaries, recording presentations you're at and getting it to do a summary, be it in a formal tone or an informal tone. And obviously, Samsung wants you to buy Galaxy S24 to get these features. But yes, they did mention at the time that later in the year, some of the other Samsung devices would get these features too. So we've just been told that the Galaxy S23 models will, from this week onwards, start getting updates. Now, unlike Apple, the updates are not globally at the same time. So some of the first devices will get updates from later this week. And then over the next couple of months, it'll spread around the world. So it'll be the Galaxy S23, S23 Plus, S23 Ultra, and S23 FE, the Fan Edition, and also the Fold and Flip 5. So they'll be getting most of those AI features. Apparently, the other versions won't get those features. Maybe they'll launch some later in the year, but at least Samsung is rewarding the people with the last generation. And of course, in the middle of this year, we'll have the Fold 6 and the Flip 6. So anyway, AI is now here. We're going to hear more about that from Apple, and every manufacturer is going to have AI now as part of their standard set of capabilities, and we're never going to hear the end of it.
Now, we're in the era of using satellite for home and business internet, right?
We certainly are, yeah. Elon Musk has done a great deal of work in popularizing that, and now we have Amazon and others who are racing to launch their own mobile networks too. But in Australia, Telstra is the biggest phone provider, biggest internet company. It's a bit like AT&T in the US. And they announced 6 months ago that they were going to be having a plan to resell Elon Musk's Starlink service in Australia. And where it's a little bit different to Starlink from buying it from Starlink themselves is that for $125 a month, not including the $599 cost to buy the Starlink equipment, but you will also get unlimited calls to landlines and mobiles from, you know, on the same plan. So whether you're in the rural areas or you're in the city, if you want to have a Starlink connection that is completely independent from the NBN, it's operating completely over the satellites, you know, if there's some sort of outage, as long as you've got power to your modem, you can still get a connection to the satellite. And this is now, you know, rolling out right now. It's taken them a while to do it, but they've launched it. And $125 a month, 50 megabits down, 10 megabits up, that's the speed. I think you can get faster on Starlink, but you won't get the phone plan. And for some people, that'll be very important to have the mobile phone connectivity. For others, they'll just use WhatsApp or FaceTime or Skype. And won't worry about having a landline effectively, you know, type of standard Australian number service.
Now, listen, I started my media career in the bush in Australia. So I spent time in Moree, in Parkes, in Bendigo, in New South Wales and Queensland, New South Wales and Victoria. And I always keep in touch with those that I met there and I've become friends with for life. And they tell me Starlink has absolutely gone off. And that farmers in particular are cracking on to Starlink more than anyone on the land.
Well, it's an alternative. I mean, when you were connecting through NBN's satellite system, until Starlink came along, they were giving you much slower speeds and much smaller amounts of data than you could get if you were a city dweller on ADSL or fiber to the node or fiber to the premises. And so, you know, as a satellite user, you were very much a second-class citizen. Now, when Starlink came along, it really put a rocket underneath the NBN in Australia, and they've started off by giving you unlimited access to streaming because people were wanting to watch Netflix. That was chewing up most of people's data. And now, you know, on the NBN, you can get unlimited data just like you can with Starlink and with Telstra. So competition is good. And let's not forget, NBN has been a government-run system, government-run service. And so, you know, especially those services need some public sector competition to really, you know, kick into the next gear. So absolutely, it's been a wonderful thing. Look, Elon Musk is launching more satellites and version 2 satellites of Starlink because there's so many people on Starlink. It's starting to slow down a little bit for some people. So, you know, he's been continuously upgrading his network. And as we've spoken about before, you know, the next generation of phones that are coming between now and the end of the decade all will have the ability to send and receive calls and data directly to satellites in space. And all those satellites that can talk to your mobile phones are being launched. So this, you know, we've been sort of going incrementally the past few years, but with AI, with satellites, with all the different leaps in technology, we're starting to make much bigger jumps in technological capability. And we're very lucky that this is the time that we're alive to see it all and benefit from it.
Yeah, we could, you know, Australia is, we don't have enough competition in supermarkets. We don't have enough competition in other areas where, you know, if we did, it would force prices down and make life a hell of a lot easier. But anyway, that's good news. Okay, I want to just end with some news out of the CSIRO, who I bashed endlessly last week because of the fact that they were totally inept at comparing the benefits and the cons, the pros and cons of nuclear energy. But anyway, putting that aside, they've also released today some of what will be an extraordinary era for healthcare because of AI.
Look, it's interesting that you talk about the nuclear stuff. Why is it that the CSIRO, our, you know, chief science organization in Australia, government-run organization, can acknowledge the AI benefits, the AI trends for healthcare, but not acknowledge that there could be AI improvements in the safety and efficiency of nuclear?
Correct.
I mean, let's ask them that question.
Correct.
Hello, you know. But they're saying that there's the inevitable integration of AI into Australia's healthcare sector, from clinical decision support to administrative tasks. And they're saying that AI in healthcare is unique because of the accuracy of models, could mean the difference between life or death or ongoing health or illness. And, you know, there's newer and better digital tools that harness the benefits of AI in healthcare, they're saying. There's frameworks and ethical implementation, along with established safety, quality and monitoring guidelines, continue to be imperative. All those things could be helping nuclear rollout in a much safer and faster way. Every other country just about has it except us. So, you know, there's the digitalization of health records that's rapidly expanding, and the AI is going to help with imaging, diagnosis and treatment and reconciliation of reports and analysis of clinical data. So this report is available to download and read and digest for yourself. And AI is only going to make healthcare, you know, better, and it's going to make energy generation from all the different sources, you know, from solar, from wind, from improving batteries, from you know, making thorium, from uranium, everything. Everything's going to be enhanced tremendously by AI, and we're just, again, we're lucky to be living in this era, in this time, and having a hand in making sure that the ethics are respected, that, you know, we help to create a future that is much more on the utopian scale of things, the post-scarcity society that Star Trek speaks about, as opposed to the dystopian nightmares that Black Mirror and The Terminator revel in showing us and scaring us to death with.
Yeah, very, very true. Now, are you going to get yourself a ride in a tuk-tuk while you're there?
Well, hopefully. I'm going to go to the Patpong markets with some of the other Australians here later on today.
Good.
And we'll probably jump in a tuk-tuk because why not? But you see very few of them on the road. They're sort of more, you know, you used to see them all the time. So not many more of them now. It's all much more modernized.
Is that right?
The
things
way
have
of the
changed
world. Yeah.
Since I was last there. All right, Alex, fantastic. I'll send people to your website, techadvice.life. You enjoy yourself in Bangkok.
Thank you. And I'll be back on Saturday night. I'll see you all next week as well. Bye-bye.
For your program as well, Saturday night, Australian time. Thank you, mate. Appreciate it. Alex Zaharoff-Royd. I'm Chris. We'll be back at the same time to do it tomorrow. Sonia Poulton up next. This is Chris Smith.